Vayelech Moshe Vaydaber Es Hadvarim Ha'ele El Kol Yisrael.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your editor, Phil Chernofsky, and this show, the first one of the year 5773, is for Shabbat Shuva, Shabbat Parshat Vayelech, and for Yom Kippur. Recording and first broadcast Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the fourth day of Tishrei 5773, corresponding to September 20th. Hope everyone had a good Rosh Hashanah and looks forward to a meaningful and a good Yom Kippur and a very festive Sukkot to follow closely on Yom Kippur's heels. But let's take it back a little. Actually, first, let's say Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shimava koli, tihyena aznecha kashuvot, lakol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai miya'amod, ki imacha haslicha lama'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kivita nafshi velidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael, mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha-omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha-makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, u'me'afela l'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala u'vizman kariv, v'nomar, amen. Okay, let's try to get into Parshat Vayelech, but before we do that, just a little overview of these 10 days. Aseret Yimei Teshuvah, the 10 days of return, the 10 days of penitence, as they are called, are the days including 2 days of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. If you, for the moment, do not include Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we're talking about 7 days between them. 7 out of the 10 days of Teshuvah. 7 days means there is exactly one Sunday, one Monday, one Tuesday, one Wednesday, one Thursday, one Friday, and one Shabbat. Doesn't always start like that. In fact, it can never start like that, but that's not the point. This year, for example, yesterday we had our first Wednesday of the year, and then today is the first Thursday, and tomorrow is the first Friday. Shabbat Shuva is the first Shabbat of the year. And that's significant. Then we have a first Sunday. Then we technically have a second Monday, but the first one was Rosh Hashanah, and we're not counting that because it wasn't a regular day. So we have a Monday, we have a Tuesday, and we don't count the Wednesday, which is Yom Kippur, but that was yesterday, our first Wednesday. So you have 7 days of the week, and there is a special focus on the Shabbat. By that concept of start off on a good foot, let me even take you one step back. I didn't have an opportunity to announce this to a group this year, but I thought of it. The mincha of the weekday from last Sunday was not just a weekday mincha and not just Erev Rosh Hashanah. It was the last tefillah of the year. 3 times a day, Arvit, Shacharit, Mincha, an extra time, Musaf, of all the Shabbatot and all the Rosh Chodeshes and all of the Chagim, and the very last davening of 5752 was the Mincha of this past Sunday. That has a significance. Leil Rosh Hashanah, the first davening of the year. We think in terms of the last and the first that link together to make a cycle, and picture it as like the clasp of a strand of a necklace or whatever. And we feel a significance in them. Technically, Mincha is Mincha, and it doesn't matter which day it is. But that's not really so. We relate to the Mincha of Yom Kippur. We relate to the Musafim of Rosh Hashanah, or whatever. But, being a first Shabbat of the year, we have an opportunity to do it well, do it right, set the pace and set the tone for the year. Go that little bit extra to prepare special food, to have an extra special dessert, to sing more zmirot, to say kiddush with more feeling. I'm not going in order now. To learn on Shabbat afternoon, maybe more than you usually do. If you don't, then do something. If you do, then do more. Just make this Shabbat special, hold it up as the model, and always try to outdo it, but not underdo it. That's one of the significances of the Shabbat between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So that's this Shabbat. Now, we read Parshat Vayelech, not always for Shabbat Shuvah. Sometimes we read Ha'azinu, which we're not going to read until next week. The difference is, if there is a Shabbat between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, which this year there is, then we need to split the normal double sedra of Nitzavim and Vayelech, so that we will get up to Simchat Torah with Vizot HaBracha when we finish the Torah and start it with Bereshit again, without having a loose end. In other words, last Shabbat we read Nitzavim. Sometimes the last Shabbat of the year, one right before Rosh Hashanah, is Nitzavim and Vayelech, and this time it was Nitzavim by itself. As I said, the determining factor as to whether Nitzavim and Vayelech are read together or not, separated, is there a Shabbat between Yom Kippur and Sukkot? If yes, which happens when Rosh Hashanah is Monday, Tuesday, or Tuesday, Wednesday, this year it was Monday, Tuesday, then there will be a Shabbat between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. That gets Ha'azinu, and of necessity we have to split Nitzavim and Vayelech. What comes out of that is that Vayelech is sometimes read on the last Shabbat of the year, and sometimes, like this year, it's read on the first Shabbat of the year. And that's the way it works. Now, it turns out that this year, 5773, starts with Vayelech and will end with Vayelech. We will read it twice during the year. The only Sedra that is a weekly portion twice. Now it's Vayelech by itself. The last Shabbat of 5773 will be Nitzavim in Vayelech. You know that I like these kind of little factoids and statistics and trivia. I don't like that word applied to Torah stuff, but you know what I mean. So that's the story. Now, Vayelech happens to be the shortest Sedra of the 54 in all of Torah. It is 30 Pesukim long. That's all. Contrast that with the largest Sedra Nusso, 176 Pesukim. So by number of Pesukim, this is almost only one-sixth the size of Parshat Nusso, or Nusso is six times almost greater than Vayelech. turns out, though, that Vayelech's psukim, its verses, are the longest of the Torah. Sort of ironic. Shortest number of psukim, smallest number of psukim, longest psukim. Still doesn't make it a big sedra. It's relatively short. And it doesn't even put it too far ahead in the list when it comes to words or letters, but it does get off the last place a little bit. Anyway, not the point. Not the important point. The important point that I would like to share are the two mitzvot that are contained in Vayelech. We basically went through a period of Shofetim Re'ei and Ki Teitzei, three sedras, 170 mitzvot. Ki Tavo from 2 weeks ago had six mitzvot, last week had none, this week has two, next week none, Vizot HaBracha none, most of the book of Bereshit doesn't have mitzvot, has only three scattered, so we're finished for now with the vast majority of the 613 mitzvot. There are two left in this week's Torah reading, and when you think about it, it fits to be the final mitzvot of the Torah. Mitzvah number 612 is called Hakhel. Hakhel means gather the people. Moshe tells the people that when they live in Eretz Yisrael and they have a Beit HaMikdash, they should gather the people together once in 7 years at Sukkot time, following a Shemitah year. Everyone is obligated to come to Yerushalayim, men, women, with their children, for the mitzvah of Hakel. Hakel is the reading from the Torah of the Beit HaMikdash by the Melech, the King of Israel. And when you imagine people, especially before fast travel methods, pretty much stayed in their regions. Regions were by tribes, and customs varied from tribe to tribe. And this is the same thing, Lahavdil, as the United States being 50 different states united together. The people of Israel are 12 tribes united, and the regions of the country, the land of Israel, is 12 regions based on tribes, united as a single country, under one king, ideally. And once in 7 years, when everybody gathers, the differences between the tribes fall away, and the purpose of this gathering is to hear the words of the Torah from the king. Now, it so happens that this is something to look forward to in the time of Melech HaMashiach, with the Beit HaMikdash, and a restoration of those mitzvot that have been suspended or in abeyance until then. But in Israel, we get a little bit of a taste of what it must have been like. There is something that is held once every 7 years, one of the days of Chol HaMoed in the Sukkot following Shemitah year, called Zecher LaHakel, a commemorative of Hakel. You have to make it very clear that this is not Hakel. It is not the fulfillment of the mitzvah. That mitzvah does not apply today. But we want to remember it. And there is a gathering of an amazing number of people at the Kotel Plaza. And there is the reading from a Torah of parts of the Book of Devarim, just as the king read. It's read by the president of the country, it's read by the prime minister, by the chief rabbi, by the chief chaplain. Different people get different portions to read, and it is a very, very impressive ceremony as a commemorative, a tiny glimpse at what Hakel must have been, and Mir Tzashem, what it will be. So that's mitzvah number 612. Then we come to mitzvah 613. Remember, this parsha begins with Moshe Rabbeinu saying, today is my birthday. I am 120 years old today, and I am going to die. And he's giving his final words to the people. We will hear them not just in Vayelech, but in Ha'azinu and in Vizot HaBracha as well. But he's wrapping it up. And he presents the final mitzvah, which is V'ata, and now, Kitvu Lachem et Hashira Hazot, write this song. And our tradition teaches us that this song, in this context, means all of Torah. Vilamda et Bnei Yisrael, and teach it to the people of Israel, Sima Befihem, put it in their mouths, that they should be fluent in Torah. The mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah is the not only one of the 613 mitzvot, it's the 613th, the final mitzvah of the Torah. That is at least according to the Sefer HaChinuch. We won't get into now what the Rambam counts one more mitzvah in Ha'azinu. Maybe next week we'll talk about it. This final mitzvah, 613, to write a Sefer Torah, is fulfilled if a person actually buys the parchment and writes himself a Sefer Torah. Or hires someone, commissions someone to write a Sefer Torah. Or buys a Sefer Torah. Now he owns one, and that's a fulfillment also of writing a Sefer Torah. Or if he contributed money towards the writing of a Sefer Torah. That's already more common. Not everybody has the zchut and the ability to write a Sefer Torah or to commission a Sefer Torah. It's a very costly project. But those many synagogues that are in the process of writing a new Sefer Torah for itself will give people the opportunity for a modest contribution to share in a letter here, a word there, a sentence there, a column there, whatever, different schedule of donations. And some people who attend the ceremony of the completion of the Sefer Torah are actually called up to fill in the outline of some letters that have been left by the sofer, the scribe, so that the person can actually do some of the writing in a Sefer Torah. It is a very exciting thing. Completion of a Torah is then accompanied by a ceremony called Hachnasat Sefer Torah, bringing a new Torah into the shul, live music, nice buffet, and various speakers and prayers that are said, and it's a big thing. So mitzvah number 613, to acquire a Sefer Torah, to write a Sefer Torah and to acquire a Sefer Torah, is a very important mitzvah, because the Torah is the core and essence of Jewish life. Now, you have to add one more important step. Once upon a time, a long time ago, the text for Torah learning was a Sefer Torah, a Torah scroll. A teacher had a Torah scroll. He had his students, which formed a circle around him. He opened the Torah, he read from the Torah, and taught the students what everything meant. That is long gone. The Sefer Torah, the actual Torah scroll, is relegated to the ark in the shul, and it is taken out and read on Shabbat and Chagim, and Monday and Thursday, whatever. And the texts that teachers use to teach their students Torah are Chumashim, Tanakh, Mishnayot, Gemara, Shulchan Aruch, and a Baruch Hashem almost countless number of Sifrei Kodesh, holy books, from which to learn and to teach Torah. So our sages at various times have said, since the Torah gives a special reason or a special use of the Sefer Torah, it doesn't just command the writing of a Torah. It says, Kitvu lachem et hashir hazot vilamda et b'nei Yisrael, and teach it. Use it as a teaching text. So various authorities say fulfillment of this mitzvah is also accomplished by the writing or commissioning or acquisition of various and sundry Sifrei Kodesh, holy books, in which to learn, to study, and to teach. So when you go to the store and you buy the stone edition of the Art Scroll Chumash, you are fulfilling the mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah. And one should keep that in mind when buying books, when giving them as gifts, when receiving them, when building a Torah library. And this is not only the printed book, this goes for your little Discman key, also known as a USB flash drive or whatever. Here we call it a Discman key. To use that in order to have a database with many, many holy texts, that too is a fulfillment of the mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Shabbat Shuva, Parshat Vayelech. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Shabbat Shuva, also for Yom Kippur. What you just heard is a little piece of what I think is one of the most joyous songs of the Yom Kippur service. And we'll talk about it in Mir Tashem in a couple of minutes, but I want to get back to the thought that I asked you to hold. So far, we have mitzvah number 613, according to Sefer Achinuch, the last of the 613 mitzvot, to write a Sefer Torah, to commission the writing of a Sefer Torah, to participate in the writing or the commissioning of a Sefer Torah, and to acquire Sifrei Kodesh, holy books, from which to learn, to study, and to teach. It seems that most of the authorities that add this thing about building a Torah library consider it to be a derivative of the mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah, following the logic that I expressed, that of the Torah actually saying, Vilamda et b'nei Yisrael, teach it to the people of Israel. Rabbeinu Asher, the Rush, a Rishon, has a very, very interesting and I think exciting twist on this mitzvah. He says, because of that change, which I described earlier, from the Torah being the text for learning to becoming that for public reading of the Torah, but no longer the text for learning, he says that the order of and the emphasis of the fulfillment of this mitzvah also changes. He says, primary fulfillment of the mitzvah of, quote, write a Sefer Torah, is the building of a personal Torah library by a Chumash, by a Shulchan Aruch, by a Tanakh, by Mishnayot, by a Gemara, by an art scroll book, by an annotated sitter, any book that facilitates Torah study is the primary fulfillment of mitzvah number 613. Secondary to that, he says, the equivalent of, and it's also nice if you're able to write a Sefer Torah, or to commission the writing of a Sefer Torah, or to acquire a Sefer Torah, or to participate in the writing of a Sefer Torah. But it was a very startling twist. This is brought down in a book by the Chafetz Chaim on mitzvot. And as I said before, it is all based upon the fact that the Torah doesn't just say, V'yata kitvu lachem et hashira hazot, but the Torah says, V'lamdo et b'nei Yisrael. As if the Torah says, the purpose of writing a Torah is to have a text to learn and to teach. If you have other texts to learn and to teach available, and Sefer Torah is not used for that purpose, then according to the Rush, the primary fulfillment of this mitzvah is the acquisition of Sifrei Kodesh, holy books, in any language, in order to learn, to study, and to teach with and from. One further step of this is, next time you're in a bookstore, next time you look for a book, and it could be that you have an extensive library of Sfarim already, but the next time you pick up a book from which to study, to learn, to teach, have in mind L'shem Mitzvat Ketivat Sefer Torah, for the sake of the mitzvah, the commandment to write a Torah. Of course, it's conditional on using it. And that's when you fulfill the mitzvah of Vishinantam Livanecha, to study, to teach, and to learn. But the purchase of the book is already the beginning of the fulfillment of this very significant mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah. Okay. Enough said on that. Shabbat Shuva traditionally is a Shabbat where the rabbis of the shuls gather the people in the afternoon and have a major address, a drasha, a Shabbat Shuva drasha. And we at the Israel Center are pleased to have Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, the Executive Vice President Emeritus of the Orthodox Union, who spends a lot of time now in Israel, has an apartment here in Israel, still goes back and forth, but more forth than back, if you want to say that, or than he has been in the past, and it's our gain. Not only are we having him for the Shabbat Shuva Drasha, but he's our scholar in residence and Shabbat guest at a Shabbaton, which begins tomorrow afternoon with early Shabbat, and continues into Friday night with a shir, and Divrei Torah, and Shabbos morning, and in the afternoon, and late afternoon. It's a day of Torah learning, a day of inspiration, hopefully, a day of good meals and good camaraderie, and hopefully an enjoyable experience for all of the participants, which at the moment are over 70, or maybe 75. That's at the Israel Center. So now, we're past Shabbat, and you got Sunday and Monday. Tuesday already is Erev Yom Kippur, and Tuesday has its own nature. Interesting that Erev Yom Kippur is a day that it is forbidden to fast, a day that it is a mitzvah to eat. The eating should not be to stuff one's face, but the eating should be l'shem mitzvah. And one of the ways that I've always understood it is a very important message. Yom Kippur, a day of abstention from eating and drinking, a day of abstention from wearing comfortable leather shoes and use of lotions and cosmetics and of bathing and of marital relations, is a day that minimizes physicality and therefore allows for maximizing spirituality. We get as close to a state of being like an angel as we get any other time of the year. That's one of the purposes of Yom Kippur and its abstentions, and purifying for the day by going to the mikveh and dressing in white and wearing a white kittel and whatever the trappings are. It's mostly a day saturated with prayer and introspection, and it is a very non-physical, spiritual kind of day. That is immediately preceded by a day where it is a mitzvah to eat, and we recognize that that is also how we serve God. In other words, Judaism doesn't believe, and maybe this is obvious from other holidays, but Judaism does not believe that a person needs to abstain from eating and drinking and subsist when he does eat on bread and water and become that divorced from physical benefits and pleasures in order to become spiritual. We see this in our Shabbat, and we see this in holidays, and we see it on Erev Yom Kippur, the day right before Yom Kippur, that it is a day of eating and drinking, and it is, or has the potential to be, as spiritual as Yom Kippur itself. Some suggest that the reason we have vidui, the verbal confession, at Mincha on Erev Yom Kippur, usually before a person eats his Seudah HaMafseket, the final meal, which is a festive meal, is to say, this too is a way that I approach God. I don't only approach God by stopping to eat and drink. And this, you see in the Torah, when Moshe ascended Mount Sinai, it says there he stayed 40 days and 40 nights, lechem lo achalti, umayim lo shatiti. That was a different kind of thing. That's not something for us to aspire towards. We eat when we're supposed to, we abstain from eating, fasting when we're supposed to, we minimize when we're supposed to, we maximize when we're supposed to, and all of that is seen as a way, if it's done properly, to approach God. Eating can be obscene. Eating can be gluttonous. And that, of course, is not spiritual, and it's not getting closer to God. But believe it or not, fasting could also be obscene. When a person just fasts and doesn't use that day for the introspection and the prayer and the self-improvement, or at least the making of resolutions that are supposed to accompany the day of fasting. So that's what I wanted to say about Erev Yom Kippur. Excuse me, there's a tradition on Erev Yom Kippur morning of saying kaparot, which originally was done with a male chicken for a man and for a female chicken for a woman. And a pregnant woman would take one of each, and there was a ceremony of waving it around their heads and saying various passages. And it was meant to sensitize the person, because what happened to the chicken after kaparot, which is what it's supposed to be today as well, was ritual slaughter, and then preparation of that chicken to provide a meal for before Yom Kippur to a poor person. Many people today shortcut the procedure, and they do kaparot with money, which goes to tzedakah. Shuls provide boxes and plates for collection for different causes, and they put it out at Mincha on Erev Yom Kippur, which is early enough in the afternoon to be able to do that, and the money goes to tzedakah. Yom Kippur can tend to be a day that a person stays within himself, and the message of some of these customs is that you have to go beyond yourself to other people. The act of giving tzedakah, charity, the act even more of preparing a meal or welcoming someone to a meal who can't afford one himself or needs the camaraderie, is a special interpersonal behavior which bodes well for a person standing on Yom Kippur in prayer, because he'll be able to say to God in one way or another, I treat my fellow nicely, I am kind, I do acts of kindness, so I ask of you the act of kindness as well, and accept my prayers and forgive my sins. It's not that simple, but that's part of the idea. We have three davenings a day, Shacharit in the morning, Mincha in the afternoon, Arvit or Ma'ariv at night. On Shabbat, Yom Tov, Rosh Chodesh, we add a fourth davening called Musaf. Corresponds to the Korban Musaf in the Beit HaMikdash on those days. Three davenings, or four. Yom Kippur has five. Actually really has a little bit more than that, but let's say five. It has Arvit at night, Shacharit in the morning, Musaf in the afternoon, Mincha later in the afternoon, and Ne'ilah, the unique prayer for Yom Kippur that seals off, closes off the day. I'm not mentioning Kol Nidre, which is a different kind of thing, and that's an introduction to the whole thing on Yom Kippur Eve. But the reason I mention the five prayers is that there is a poem, a song, that we say right before Vidui, verbal confession, which I'll talk about. The song before it is one of my favorites. I'm going to play a little piece of it shortly. And in that tune, it could be said in many tunes, but that's my favorite. In fact, I judge the davening of Yom Kippur each year, the hominy of the five times I hear that particular melody. But it is a statement of our feeling towards the relationship that we have with God. For we start with Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoteinu, our God and the God of our forefathers, forgive us, pardon us, atone for us. For we are your people, and you are our God. For we are your children, and you are our Father. For we are your servants, and you are our Master. For we are your congregation, and you are our portion. We are your heritage, and you are our lot. We are your sheep, and you are our shepherd. We are your vineyard, and you are our watchman. We are your handiwork, and you are our shaper. We are your friend, and you are our beloved. We are your treasure, and you are our God. We are your people, and you are our king. We are your designated, and you are our designated. After that, we realize that the relationship is not always so beautiful, because we add, we are brazen, but you are compassionate and gracious. We are obstinate, but you are slow to anger. We are filled with iniquity, but you are filled with mercy. We, our days are like a fleeting shadow, but you are eternal and your years never end. And that's continued by, what follows that, is the Vidui. Verbal confession. The song before that is the one that I want to play, and then we'll talk about the role of verbal confession in Judaism in general and in Yom Kippur specifically. But first, listen to Ki Anu Amecha. There are many ways of analyzing teshuvah, return, repentance. One way is the following. First step, recognition of sin. You've been doing something, you did it once, you did it many times, you've been doing it for years, it's your habit, but you finally realize that it's wrong. This could be joking about people, embarrassing people in a funny way. It could mean stealing without realizing that's what you've been doing. It could be violating Shabbat without realizing it. It could be you've been doing something with eating and it's not proper, whatever. Recognition that something is wrong is followed by stop doing it. Till now, you didn't know that it was wrong, or you didn't realize that it was wrong. Now you know, you have to stop. After those two steps comes regret for the past. I have been eating a certain food, I enjoyed it very much, it was one of my favorite snacks, and it's not kosher. I didn't know that, I realize it, I stop eating it, but I regret all the years that I've been consuming this particular food that wasn't kosher, or behaving in a way that was improper. Recognizing and stopping and regret. Then comes Kabbalah al Ha'atid, acceptance for the future. It was wrong. I shouldn't have done it. I regret doing it, and I won't do it anymore. Those are key elements to the process of teshuvah. There's another element which the Torah requires called vidui bapeh, verbal confession. You don't go to the rabbi and confess between you and God in prayer. And there are special places for it in everyday prayer and especially on Yom Kippur, where you verbalize, but we don't just verbalize our own. We also use plural and have an alphabetical arrangement of a list of sins and a double alphabet, all part of the process. An important thing to keep in mind is that vidui, verbal confession, is sometimes the culmination of repentance. You've done all the other things and now you verbalize it. Necessary. Sometimes you verbalize before you do tshuva, and the verbalization inspires you to repent. In spite of the order that I put things in, it doesn't have to follow that order. Vidu could be first, could be last, could be in the middle. Regret for the past could come only later sometimes, and acceptance for the future comes right away, or vice versa. It all starts with recognizing something is wrong and you have to stop doing it. But that's all part of a tshuva process, which Yom Kippur is meant to facilitate. Tshuva is acceptable all year round, and one should not wait until Yom Kippur to mend his ways. But Yom Kippur is that special day, the culmination of a 40-day period that began on Rosh Chodesh Elul, that hit a high point on Rosh Hashanah, and we should use it to the best of our ability. And that's what I wish you. I first wish you a Shabbat Shalom for this first Shabbat of the year. I wish you a Gemar Chatima Tova, a meaningful, useful, beneficial, and not too painful Yom Kippur. Use everything in the best way that it is meant to use. Daven well, and maybe not, well, I was going to say more importantly, it's up there. Make peace with your fellows, appease them, be forgiving of them, and we will have an easier time when we stand in judgment before God. Lehishtameah.